Welcome to the Rhode Island School of Design. This is the newest student-led podcast series at the world's leading art and design institution. This is RISDology.
You know, self-aware, they care for their fellow human beings. So I think that makes the whole difference. So, yeah.
Well, what have you guys been up to? It's been a huge winter break, and I feel like I'm totally out of touch with the library and you guys, and you are my favorite people at RISD. So
hey,
I had to check in.
Well, yeah. Mike, I've been here since July 1st. Every day, Monday through Friday, giving books out, giving books out to people who don't have access, people who do have access. We've been helping the teachers scan things for their classes. We've been helping graduate students do their research, scanning like mad. Yeah, so we've been busy. We are like the post office. We try not to close.
On this episode, I had the privilege of interviewing Laura Brown and Stephen McCulley at the Fleet Library in Providence, Rhode Island. We discussed the impact of COVID-19. The secret safe hidden below the RISD library, and debated killing spiders.
So are you guys basically converting all of the hard copy books to a digital platform?
Oh God, no. But there are, in the catalog, there are a lot of e-books and e-journals that you can access from off campus. But there are certain books here that you'll never see ebooks. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we have 100,000 volumes just on the first floor. So The task to do that would be
monumental.
Years in the making. So,
right.
We've been tapping in where we could and purchasing those ebooks. Like Stephen said, we're scanning a ton for faculty. We're just trying to, you know, the bottom line for us is that you guys get what you need for your classes. So
that's
what we're trying to do.
I asked Laura and Stephen, what has it been like not being able to engage with students on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, let me tell you, I am so bored. I need people. because let's face it, I mean, that's risky, right? Interacting with everybody, sharing ideas, sharing, just being creative and collaborating. And I miss that. Especially the formal when, it'd be April, May, June. Ah, boring. Sitting in my two-room apartment. If you think you had a small apartment. Because I'm never home. I'm always either at work or
right.
People. But that really, this curtailed everything. So I am missing. And I told everyone when we have these stupid Zoom meetings. I cannot stand Zoom, by the way.
No, me neither, trust me.
Badmouth anybody. But anyway, as soon as it's over, I want to have a huge party at the library. Yeah. Just open the doors.
Oh,
and just have
my gosh.
Yeah, and have music.
Wait, that is an amazing idea. Can I spearhead this?
Yeah, for sure.
Movies. I just wanted to.
We should do like some. I've always wanted to do some social thing at the libraries, like over the weekend.
Gosh.
The big space, we call it the living room, you know, open that up, have some food, music or readings, or even if it's a poetry or something, something where people are together.
You know, we miss the students so much. I love the students. I love interacting with them. You know, I've been here on and off a long time, but I'll tell you, about 25 years ago when I had my first son, I was on maternity leave, and this just typifies a RISD student. I went to go visit Joanne Stryker and Diane Blair in Foundation Studies, and I was climbing the flight of stairs up to Waterman with the stroller in my, and this RISD student came flying up the stairs. She opened the door for me, and then I went in, and she flew back down the stairs. She wasn't even going into Waterman. And I was like, wow, that is a RISD student to the T. And, you know, I love interacting because, you know, I was a student here as well. I graduated in a million years ago. And
many moons ago, right?
You know, I do really understand what you guys are going through. RISD is hard. And you guys are brilliant. I love what you're doing. I love to hear what you're doing. And, you know, Stephen and I, you know, we could go, oh, you should talk to this person because they're doing this. And the reference librarians here are fabulous. They're open. They're really helpful. Any research question, you should email them. But we're here to help you guys. And
that's one of the big things that I do miss, Mike, is seeing the students and seeing what they're working on and what they're researching, because not only are they learning, I learn from them. What's current, see what they're doing, you know, sharing their ideas with me and just seeing what I mean, because, you know, RISD is visual. You got to see it. You got to touch it. You got to sense it. You got to, I mean, that's what, 95% of RISD?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to start this podcast, in order to start to be, you know, somehow connect people, not over another gosh darn email that we're going to get. Because no one reads the emails. And
this is a great idea. I think I really hope you reach a lot of the community, because that's what's missing. You know, the wonderful community can't come together. It's so hard.
No, for sure. And Laura, those stairs in Waterman are the steepest stairs. I give tours for the admissions office. And honestly, that has been one of the major things that I miss most. Talking about tours, when I go into 15 West, half the time I say it was a bank, and half the time I say it was a hospital. And I don't think I necessarily know which one it is. Do you guys know?
Yeah, it was definitely a bank, but the first bank was called the Rhode Island Hospital Trust. And what how they got the name was they were the only banks that would give money to hospitals to support the hospital. So so they got the name Rhode Island Hospital Trust because they began, you know, loaning money to the hospital. So that morphed into a lot of things. And then Fleet took over, and then Fleet donated the downstairs to where we are now. So that became the Fleet Library. And then eventually, when all the lawyers and bankers moved out, RISD bought the whole building, and now it's a 500-bed dormitory.
That's interesting. So it wasn't necessarily like a full-on RISD took over. It was over.
Right. Oh, yes. It was over a period of time. And if people want to see how that morphed, I believe the archives has pictures of those, of how it was morphed into the RISD library. And those are very interesting, because when the bank eventually moved out, it was just basically an empty hall. And all the structures that are here now were actually moved in, And it was like a playhouse. It was like moved in and built.
So how long after the library was acquired did you guys commission Monica Ponce de Leon to build that amazing interior structure?
Well, I think that was already in the plans. And I believe that was built in a studio, and then it was disassembled, and then it was brought in and assembled. And what you see now in the library is what it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, it all happened under Roger Mandel. I just wanted
to
do a shout out to him because... Yeah, he just recently passed away.
That's true. And he loved books. He had a collection and he has donated a lot of his books to us.
Yeah, big supporter of the library and other things.
Well, I thought it was amazing. I was reading up on him when he passed. And I mean, I think it said that he had tripled the endowment
during
his tenure to $400 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk to, you can just talk to the man and you can see how people just wanted to donate money. I mean, because he spent like 15 years here. So the man loved RISD. You have to believe that. I mean, there's no denying that.
And I also didn't know his major influence in Qatar with the museums that he helped establish there.
Yes, exactly.
I thought that was crazy. The first 2 years I would go over to Jolly Rogers, and I would never know. There's, you know, you walk into Jolly Rogers, on the right there's this photo montage of these photos of him, and I'm like, who the heck is this guy? And then I finally like clicked it together, but it took a bit.
What significant changes have you noticed at RISD over time?
Well, I don't know. You're too young. You probably don't remember the old library on Benefit Street.
Right. No, I go in there. I've gone in there before.
Right. And so
it's just amazing. And I'm so ashamed that it's just kind of been vacated. And I'm like,
they have events there, but they can't kind of pinpoint how they want to use the upstairs. But the thing about that is when I came here, oh my God, I don't even want to tell you when I came here, but I came here in 1988 and the library was not automated. There was only one computer for four staff people. Laura, you probably remember this. Each book had a yellow card in the back of it, and that's how you would check the book out. You get the little card, sign your name, and at the end of the night, we would have to count those little yellow cards to see how many books went out. Mm-hmm. A lot of changes I have seen through the years, not just building wise, but technology-wise.
You'll laugh, Stephen, because when I was a student here, so I was here from the punk years, 79 to 83.
The end of disco,
Ellie Nachman was a long reference librarian, and she used to check out my books and, you know, do it with a ledger. You know, so you'd write your name and the books and... the card, like you said, do a card catalog. There were no computers here when I was in school.
No.
At all.
Well, the old library up on Benefit, it almost reminds me a lot of the Athenaeum.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is right across the street. Yeah.
When I started in the library, I was actually the stack supervisor, and what that meant was like I handled all the books, but I also did all the shelving that we did in the special collections that was in the back and in the archive area, which was just a range at that point.
Yeah, we called it the lock case.
Yeah, we called it the lock case. And it was the only place that was air conditioned in the library. And let me tell you, I used to jump it up in those window wells and steam them with kids.
Yes.
And we went, raise those huge windows to get air in the library. It was quite the...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
It's really actually nice to have air conditioning. So it would get
Yeah.
Swelled really hot.
And even the auditorium only had air conditioning, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago when it was put in, right?
That was big news.
that was a big deal. Yeah, definitely.
But we used to have an offsite storage place then. I remember one summer we picked all the books for that.
And oh my God, you think the basement down here was scary. That was scary too.
Yeah, so I moved all those books down to the basement of Prov Washington building. And one time...
Oh, I've been down there. That is an interesting space.
Yeah, we took over what it was a lawyer's office. And how creepy is this? They left all these like records of their clients just hanging around down there. I don't know what we did with them. I don't know. It was just so weird.
Yeah, that was weird. It was almost like they were like heading for the hills.
They went out of business or something. Yeah.
Wait, so are you saying that before Prov Wash, that building was a lawyer's building?
Yes.
Prov Washington was an insurance building upstairs, but they had rented out a small space in the basement.
They had a really good cafeteria down there too.
I had no idea
where the old Akai's was stored. So I would go down there a couple of times to get sandwiches for lunch. It was nice.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But one time a pipe burst and I was alone in the basement, and the phone was in the other office, like way across the room, and it was the only time in my life I've ever thrown a book in my life. And I was taking these books and I was heaving them across the room so they wouldn't get wet. And then finally, somebody realized something was going on, but it abated. And I ran across the room and I'm calling, "It's flooding in the basement." And the whole reason we moved into this weird building is because it's actually supposedly flood resistant. It's built like in a tub. So, and actually the air conditioning in that building, they created ice in the basement and somehow, you know, it would air condition the building. It was, it's kind of fascinating. You should look into it as an architect. And, but the, you know, crazy as it is, internal flood happened. And, that is the one thing I'm worried about in this building, because if you've seen the markers on the building, we had floods.
Knock on wood.
1952,
we
Carol, and before that, 1938. Of course, the unnamed hurricane that like devastated Rhode Island.
You have firsthand experience, so you're probably traumatized. And
I'm traumatized just going down to storage now in the basement.
Well, I'm going to have to tell everyone about the story now, because you've queued it up for me. But basically, when you walk into the Fleet Library, on the left, there is this really amazing staircase and then also elevator.
Yeah, so right? What that was is when there was a bank and you had a safety deposit box, you would wait there and the bank personnel would come and get you and bring you, either use the elevator or go down those stairs. And I don't know if you remember, but there, when you go downstairs right before the vault, there are little closets where you would go in and view your box. Right now it's just storage. People are just throwing things.
Well, when I went there and I was with a few of my friends, right? And we were super eager to get down there. And so we went down there and we went through the elevator in the main hallway and we had to pass by the boiler.
Yes, yeah, that's scary too.
Scary place. Because, that is definitely scary.
That's an old, because they don't do that anymore. The new tower, the boiler is on the roof. This is an old building, so the boiler is below.
Right.
That's how they made it. But now the building next door, the boiler room is up on the roof.
And then we went near the vault, and it felt like I was transported into Ocean's 11.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, where's the money, you know?
Vegas.
That door to the vault, that we have several vaults down here, but yes. That main vault is amazing.
Yes.
It is what, 20 feet tall?
Oh, at least.
And like 10 feet thick?
They don't make that kind of vault anymore. If you want an antique, that is definitely an antique.
Yeah, I feel like RISD could take that out and sell that for top dollar.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know what you would do with it.
I don't know how they get it out of here.
Well, that's true. That's the thing. How do you get it out? How did it even get in here? I think
it was built on site. I don't know. It had to be.
Well, I think they should store like the deepest secrets in it and lock it.
Yeah.
Instead of storing, you know, random stuff.
Yeah.
One of the other vaults, we store all our actual films.
Yes.
And you open the door and, you know, it smells like that celluloid. It's, you know, old film canisters. It's crazy. And it's very interesting down there, and it does creep us out when we go down there.
Well, I think it creeps me out is because there's so many probably unexplored areas because it's such a maze down there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a secret passage to get up to Portfolio. That's kind of scary.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, yes. Yes. One day I'll show you, Laura.
It is amazing. So,
anyone who's listening who wants to see the basement, go up to Laura and Steven and ask them for a full tour.
We don't like to advertise this, but it's pretty scary. And you don't want to get lost down there, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised that like film majors have not taken advantage of it.
And unfortunately, we can't allow that because it's just so unsafe. It would have to be supervised. And again, it's basically just storage area. So it would be just a scary, scary thing if somebody wants to do that. But people have asked us to do film. And all I can think of is a scary horror show, someone tied up there and being tortured. I don't know. I don't know if that's my warped mind, but because it is a scary place.
Now, I remember on a different subject, and I wonder if you guys know about this. Speaking about the basement, do you know, and this is about the Providence Mall, and apparently there was a room, a secret room built in the Providence Mall that there was a couple living in the mall.
Wait a minute.
Not in the basement.
It was not a secret room. What happened was, I'm not sure, the way the mall was built, this down where the parking lot is, because the parking lot is below, the structure, the way it was built, it made this kind of room. And someone, actually, I think it was two people, found it and kind of made it like a little living room space, unbeknown to the security, because security didn't know about the space because it wasn't a normal space to you know, when they did their rounds. And I'm not really sure how it was discovered. I think
they left the door open, apparently.
Well, maybe. And then either someone saw it and told the security, or a security guard when they did the rounds.
But they were living there for years.
They had a TV. Years. I'm not sure how the TV was, how they got the electricity, but they had a TV account. Yeah, it was kind of amazing how they.
I thought they did build it, and then nobody noticed it. But
the structure was still, it was there. It was just like the walls were there, but it was just this empty space.
Yeah.
After proving that ghosts do live, within the depths of the RISD Library. I asked Laura and Stephen, what changes should students expect from fall 2020 to spring 2021?
We are going to use the same procedures and policies that we had in place in the fall. So okay. So basically, when you want to come into the library, you have to make an appointment, schedule an appointment for scanning, research, or just coming and getting a book, hoping that we can open up to more students, have more areas of study. We'll see how that goes. But right now we have about... four or five stations that you can reserve.
We have to clean the spots after every use.
Yeah, and I want to make that clear for students. When you come in, your appointment, we ask you to clean your area that you touched, because you know what you touched. But we, as a staff, we're constantly cleaning. The library is probably the cleanest place on campus right now. I don't want to be bragging, but
unfortunately the pavilion and the little cubbies, they're closed because that material is very porous and it can't really have cleaning 10 times a day go on it, you know? So yes. We are really, limited to just the big tables, basically. Yeah. Also, I'd like the students to know, because there's been a big kind of misconception about this, that, you know, you can make back-to-back appointments. So you can do two appointments. But, you know, if you need more time, you know, just speak to Stephen or I or Mark, who's here. And if not, you know, you can email us and, you know, let us know if you need more
time. We can juggle the spaces. Or see if who's coming in and who's not coming in. But don't think that you're confined to those first 30 or 35 minutes.
Yeah, it's a short time for the graduate students, particularly in fifth years. And we understand, you know, you need time.
So just to be clear, a student can't go in there and write a paper, for instance, and be in there for an hour or two.
Unfortunately, because... that would take up a lot of time. We can't do that right now.
Okay.
Hopefully next fall, when people are more vaccinated, we can open up to, I miss that too, because, you know, that brings bodies in here. But unfortunately, we're not allowing any kind of that kind of extensive research.
Yeah. So what's going on with our relationship with Brown University Libraries? Can RISD students use Brown University Libraries right now?
I'm going to say no, because they kind of were slow in opening. I think we opened, reopened before they did. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're allowing RISD students to go up there, just like we're not allowing Brown students to come in.
But you can do interlibrary loan.
Definitely.
Are there any famous alumni that you remember interacting with at the library?
I will mention, you know, it was really cool working here when Shepherd Ferry was a student, and he would...
I remember him.
He would leave his mark on all the... Andre the Giant on all the sewers all over Providence.
I'm not really sure what his fascination was with Andre the Giant.
I don't know, but my husband knows that I really like his work. And one day he had Andre the Giant, unbeknownst to me, a sticker stuck into my car's gas, whatever. When I popped it, there's Andre, and I was laughing. Getting gas, yeah.
Well, he did that whole thing with CNC, the sign of CNC, when he went up sign.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
blasted, he got
well,
in trouble.
Of course, Obama, you know, and...
Yeah, he did that. And who's the guy who wrote, who writes Family Guy?
Of course. Oh, God.
What's his name? I can't think of his name yet.
Oh my! He is so talented. Oh, I'm having a brain fart.
He was here, and I remember going to his senior film. It was this opera. It was the singing opera. yeah, very good, very talented.
Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm going to tell you something because I also worked in liberal arts for about 12 years. And when I was there, there was this wonderful faculty member named Peter Griffin. And Peter was an English professor, and he was writing this massive book on Van Gogh, I believe. And unfortunately, he passed away at a very young age. But the character that Seth his artwork of Peter Griffin looks amazingly like the faculty member here. I know he has said that, no, he didn't base it on Peter Griffin, but even the way he talks is very much like this faculty. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I would be, every time my boys love watching, of course, Family Guy. And every time I watch it, I always think of Peter Griffin, the faculty member. So
I've never gotten into it, and I don't know what that says about me, but all my friends are into it, and they always make references, and I never pick up on them. So.
Well, it is.
So what's the story with James Franco? Did he actually go here, or is that a
okay?
Myth?
Let me tell you a story about him, because one night,
because I'm confused.
He came. He was a graduate student, film, video. He came into the library. I think he only came in once to the library. And I totally did not recognize. He's short. He's not tall. He's not a tall man. So one student, she was all star crazy. He's in the library. I'm like, what? Who's in the library? So I go over it, and sure enough, he was upstairs in the mezzanine talking to this student. And you know what? If you didn't tell me I would have never recognized him. But he came here for 2 years. He was, and he did have the graduate show at the convention center. He did have a piece there. He was kind of a character. I touched upon
it. The students. Yeah.
Yes. Just, I mean, every day is a new day here at RISD, and it's always, things are always changing. There are new shows are going up. Well, not right now, but there's always a show to go see. There's always a program to go see. It's always, that's what I think makes RISD. It's always never a dull day on campus.
Right.
Once people are interacting and doing their thing.
I'll tell you, I used to volunteer quite a lot for commencement, and I just am crying the whole time when kids walk by. I just am like, I'm going to miss you so much. And just a lot of great memories of kids. And I mean, people come in, not now, unfortunately, alumni can't come back right now, but kids come in. I know Steven's got a huge following.
it's great. They'll come in, hug me and say, oh, we remember you. You helped us and get our books and help me in my research. I'm like, and sometimes I have to like, okay, because I can't remember everybody, right?
Yeah, for sure.
As soon as they start talking about their experience, I say, oh yeah, I remember you. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun when kids come back to tell me what are you doing now, kind of thing.
I then decided to ask Laura and Steven about their personal lives. Starting off with, are you an early bird or a late owl?
Early bird for me.
Early bird, and it's funny, we're both early birds, but we usually work the late night schedule.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
So do you have like a, are you up, are you one of those people that's up at 5:30, like
not
getting,
too,
just puttering?
No, if I'm up, I'm doing something, you know, constructive, cleaning or going to grocery shopping or reading, you know, catching up on reading.
Mm-hmm. I get up early and I just like to read early because that's mm-hmm. when I feel like I'm most cognizant.
Yeah,
because after definitely. 3 o'clock, like my brain just does not.
And your eyes, yes.
Yeah, it's just not.
That's when Steve and I are normally getting to work. That 3 to 4 period for me is like brain dead.
So come to work. That's funny. Yeah.
A typical Saturday afternoon involves
boring stuff for me, usually cleaning the house, catching up on stuff. But I usually being dragged around by my 6-month-old Australian shepherd, Suki. She's really tough for leash training right now.
That's hard.
Yes, I've actually brought her to campus a few times for the students just to, have something to touch. You know, they can pat her and everything, but she's now like a full grown, not quite their dog, and she loves people and she's really, really sweet, but she needs a ton more training.
Oh my gosh, we had a miniature Australian Shepherd.
Oh.
And she unfortunately, we didn't realize that she was the runt of the litter.
Oh.
And the breeder didn't decide to tell us this when they were selling us a very expensive dog.
Yeah. Mm.
And so unfortunately she didn't make it.
Past
two.
Oh, that's awful.
That's sad.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
So my Saturday afternoon is seasonal. So if it's in the summer, I'm on the beach. I have to be in the water, salt water, man. Cleanse me. I gotta.
Honestly.
Yeah. Mm. Or if in the fall or winter, I'm usually out walking around or just going to a new place. Just I gotta be somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I'm definitely right now during quarantine, I just go on walks and my friend's like, where are you going? I'm like, I don't know. I just gotta get out of my apartment.
Exactly.
Well, have you guys watched I think it's The Crown on Netflix? Are you guys into that?
Yeah, I've watched a few series. It's not the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm like obsessed with all that stuff. And they just go out there and they kill these like amazing deers.
Yeah, I
know. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? And they just hang it up on the wall.
I would say, you better be eating that.
Yeah.
Doing something.
I remember one time my dad took me fishing with my sister and I caught a fish and we opened it up and it had all of these baby eggs in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I just felt so bad that I didn't even want to eat the fish, but I ended up like forcing myself to eat it because I felt so bad for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's the worst. I also grew up, my mother had polio when she was 18. And she never walked. And we grew up next to a woods and right on a pond. And I spent my whole life like Huck Finn. So I was just out on that pond from dawn to dusk. My mother never knew where I was. Running around ragged. And, you know, when you were a little kid, you ran around so much that when you would stop, your lungs hurt from running around so much. That was my experience. And, you know, unfortunately, when I had my kids, you know, there was in an area where actually there were several sexual predators. I never let them out of the house without, you know, being with them. Mm-hmm. They never had that freedom, that experience. And I really think it's really horrible.
If there's a spider in your house, would you kill it or set it free?
Oh, man, I would kill it and start cleaning the area. It's got to be cleaned.
Okay, so you just heard me. I take pains. My son is so afraid of spiders. He goes, Mom, come here. And I capture it. I capture and release is my motto.
Okay, so you let it go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because I feel like if I kill it, then it will like send a signal to the other spiders in the area not to mess
that's
around.
Why I'm clean. That's why I clean to make sure
there's a whole theory why you should have spiders in your house, by the way. They're very helpful. They're very, did you not watch read Charlotte's Web? I mean, they're very helpful.
If there was hair in a soup at a restaurant, would you return it?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
No, yeah. I wouldn't complain, but I most likely would not continue eating it.
Okay.
When I was a student here, I worked at a bar and a restaurant. It was called One Up. It was, it's like that island right next to Proud Washington, that little building right there. And they used to have
New Rivers is right now.
Yeah.
That restaurant? Yeah.
Yeah, but it was upstairs. And we used to have live music and... Yeah, it was good times. And actually, I was such a poor RISD student. I worked with another RISD student who happened to be anorexic, and she would order all these really great dinners from the restaurant below, and she'd eat two bites and not finish. And then I'd be like, okay, I'll eat the rest, because it was like a free meal, as a RISD student, and it would, it was gourmet,
Yeah.
How could you?
My first 4 years.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but okay.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, listen. Poor struggling RISD student.
Yeah.
I kind of had a similar experience. My first 3 years of college, I worked in the college cafeteria, and we would get a meal for one meal free, and let me tell you, that meal was pretty big. Stock up on the food. But my food story would be one summer I worked at a hot weenie place. You ever have a hot weenie?
Like a hot dog?
Yeah, but it's a smaller dog. It's in a small bun. It has mustard and it has like chili on top of it.
Okay.
I've
never had one.
Oh, so the New York system is that you make them on your arm. So I could put 12 up my arm. You can't do it now because of obviously of health issues, but
oh my god. You have to have a photo of this.
Yeah, the thing is, every night when I came home, oh my god, I smelled like a hot weenie. It was awful.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
And the chili sauce and like, oh my god. So yeah, for 3 hours I'd be preparing these at 2 and 1 o'clock in the morning for the people.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the RISDology podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and may not express the views of the Rhode Island School of Design. RISD is not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of the information contained in our podcast series. The primary purpose of RISDology is to educate, entertain, and enlighten. If you have any recommendations for guests, please reach out to us on our Instagram page. RISDology is currently looking for students who are interested in joining the team. If you have a passion for post-production or sound editing, please let us know.